And I am your outrageously blessed host, Wishali. And today I have an incredibly special life transformative show for you. Today is a day that you will forever be changed after you hear my guest today. And for those of you who are familiar with the Wild Woman Wishali, you know that my first book is called You Are What You Love. And for those of you who have read You Are What You Love, or if you'd like to go to the website youarewhatyoulove.com, you can enjoy a sample download of the book. You will know that at the end of each chapter is a story, because people learn in different ways. And what I wanted to do was offer a myriad of different ways for people to absorb the information. So there's some wisdom that's laid out in the book You Are What You Love. There's some jokes. There's some practical techniques. And the end of each chapter ends with a story that solidifies all of the concepts that were in the preceding portion of the chapter. So when it came to writing the chapter about forgiveness, I was looking for a story that was as profound as the action of forgiveness itself is. I was looking for a story that was as great a divine gift as the act of forgiveness itself is. And today's guest, I am so thrilled and so honored to share with you, is a woman that you will never forget. This day is a day you're going to want to put a gold star on your calendar, because this is the day that you met Abigail and you heard about her profound story of forgiveness. So without further ado, I would love to welcome my beloved friend Abigail to You Are What You Love.
Well, good afternoon. It's just a joy to be with you today.
And sweetheart, for people that have not read the book, or people who have bought the book and haven't gotten to the end of chapter 5 yet, I know that when I've tried to describe your story, I never do it justice. I feel that my description, my intro, falls flat. So forgive me, I'm going to give you an intro. But after the intro, what I'd really like for you to do, because I know you do so much public speaking and you've really made yourself available as a life of service to help other people align themselves with an actualized relationship with real forgiveness, is when I get done with my clumsy introduction, is for you to feel free to, just in your own words, kind of share how you introduce yourself to people. And the way that I met Abigail is through her story that you will find at the end of chapter 5 in the book You Are What You Love. And I want to encourage anyone who reads this story to have a box of Kleenex next to you, because you can't get through this book without the story, without crying. And at first, you're going to cry when Abigail shares with you so honestly, in such a raw, truthful way, about the agony that she went through and how she first found out about the brutal murder of her 19-year-old beloved daughter, Catherine. And then how she began to find herself in the slippery slope that is a place that, all I can describe it is a place that is void of the light of forgiveness. And how she managed to slowly re-piece her mind, re-piece her sanity by, because you are what you love and you love whatever you're giving your attention to, giving her attention to things that took her down this authentic path of forgiveness and started strengthening her with the ability to learn what she needed, when she needed it, to get a bigger picture of it and to heal all the parts of her that got wounded along with her daughter's mortality. And she shares about how she was able to finally get closure in her emotional, spiritual, physical life with the action of her daughter's murder, the man who murdered him, and her reaching out and creating an authentic relationship that was about all parties growing beyond what has hurt them. And what's really amazing about this is that she included Mickey Douglas, the man who was caught in the unfortunate action of murdering her daughter. She included him in this action of growing beyond what had hurt them. And this is an amazing story. This is a story that when you're lying awake at night and you can't fall asleep, this story is going to haunt you. When you're sitting around having conversations with your friends and you come to a particular poignant moment of close friendship and authentic sharing, this story is going to come to you. This is what you're going to want to reach out and bond with other people with. This is a story that on your deathbed, you will remember this story. So forgive me, honey. I wish I had more accolades to do your story justice.
Well, I think that probably the one of the very first things that you said describes how I was for so long. And you talked about what we focus our attention on is what we bring into our lives. And being in a state of anger and rage for years and years is a real waste of a person's life. And what happened to me is I got a phone call. Imagine yourself walking into your home just to have a little bite of lunch at noon on a Monday, picking up the ringing phone and having someone at the other end of the line say, well, what do you think about Catherine being shot? And you have no idea what they're talking about or why they would say such a terrible thing. And hanging up the phone, calling the sheriff's department and saying, hello, this is Gail, mother of Catherine. I hear she's been shot. Where is she? How is she? What hospital is she at? Being absolutely, well, you can imagine how frantic I was, absolutely frantic. And having the other the person at the other end of the line say, well, no, ma'am, your daughter hasn't been shot. I'll have someone call you right back. And then waiting and waiting and waiting. I waited 3 long hours,
oh my Lord,
to get a return phone call. And when the phone finally rang again, what I heard was, no, your daughter Catherine was not shot, but your daughter Catherine is dead. She was murdered. She was stabbed to death. That's the moment that I started what I call my journey of darkness. And there were lots and lots of reasons why I was in that darkness for so long, and lots of reasons beginning with the fact that I was very, very alone. I have to tell you, Catherine was 19 years old. She was my third child. She was my baby. And losing your youngest child at that age is beyond explaining how you feel. I can tell you that you go into almost a temporary insanity. And you go into extreme denial. You cry all the time. And then when you get to the point of your grieving process that's perfectly normal, which is anger, instead of working through it like a healthy person would, and getting through to the other side of your anger, we get stuck. I got stuck. I got stuck in such anger and such rage that when I look back now, it's frightening to know how I was. Because you know when you're in that kind of anger and rage and you're lusting for revenge, that's the kind of energy that you are attracting into your life. You know, nothing wonderful is going to happen to you when that's your mindset. And I was there for a long, long time, and a lot of reasons. I was alone because my mother just had open heart surgery. My two older children had just gone off to medical school far away from me. My husband had decided that he was finished with his mourning and didn't want to talk to Catherine anymore. People at work didn't want to talk about it. People in this country don't deal with death, and they certainly don't deal with murder, because if they were to talk about it and actually face the reality of it, then that would make it real. And if it was real, it could possibly happen to them, and they couldn't deal with it. But I think when I look back now, that probably the biggest reason that I was all alone is because when Catherine died, I had no faith. I didn't have a church. I didn't have a God that I believed in. I didn't have a priest or a rabbi or any kind of a spiritual person in my life that could help me work my way through. You know, I didn't have a church family like many of you probably do. And so I was alone, and I was facing this all by myself. And I have to tell you also, the other thing that happened is that they did find the man who murdered Catherine, and the district attorney promised me that they would put him on trial, find him guilty, put him on death row. And when he was executed, that I'd be all right again. And I didn't know any better at that time. And I believed him. And so what I find is that people all over the United States who have had family members murdered are promised the same thing. The district attorneys are telling us there's this magic bullet that's going to occur and then you're going to be okay. And what it does is locks us in to that anger and rage. But I was luckier than most people because after 8 years of all that anger and rage, I started doing something very, very tiny. And I found myself on what I call my path of light or life. And I started with something so small. And I took a class in meditation. And the meditation class was, everything in that class was so new to me. And for the first time, I learned to sit still. And I learned to go within. And I learned to still my mind. And I learned there's far more to this universe than I could see or hear or taste or feel. And for me, at that time, those were real revelations. And the next step that happened is that I found myself taking my mother to a little Unity church up in a little town called Auburn, California, up in the foothills, up in the gold country. And what happened there, I found a metaphysical bookstore attached to the church. And also the minister's husband became my very good friend, and he was always helping me find new books. I was working my way through that metaphysical bookstore on my own book of the week club. And I would read a book, and I'd bring it back, and we'd talk about it. He'd advise me to take another one. Now, I started out with really easy books. I started out with books by Wayne Dyer and Richard Bach and Louise Hayes. And, you know, those are easy to read, and they're just chock full of all good kinds of information. But it takes a long time for that kind of information to kind of settle in and become really a part of you. So I was reading through that bookstore quite a bit. And you can't read your way through a metaphysical bookstore without some major changes going on in your subconscious as well as your conscious. And what I did eventually, I found myself studying all the great religious teachers that have come to us over the centuries. You know, and I studied about Buddha and Buddhism, and I studied about the Jewish faith, and I studied about Baha'u'llah and the Baha'i faith, and I studied about Muhammad and the Islamic faith. And it's interesting because I found this magic golden thread that ran through all the teachings of all the great prophets and avatars and spiritual leaders, and it was this: we are all one. We are all divine children, and we all share the same God, and we are all carry that God spirit within us. I was also offered another opportunity at this little church, and that was to become part of a class that was going to study the book A Course in Miracles. And I'd never heard of the book, but I do love to read, so I signed up for it. And before we were allowed to start the class, we had to watch a video. And the video talks about how the Course in Miracles became to be written and how it came to be published and, you know, the history behind the book. But it also had some people that were interviewed that talked about how studying A Course in Miracles had changed their lives. And so, I, to tell you the truth, I don't remember a whole lot about anything on that video except one man. And that one man was Jewish. And what he stated is that after studying A Course in Miracles, he was able to forgive not just the German people in general, but the actual guards in the camps who'd murdered every member of his family. And I just was blown away by what he had to say. And I realize now that what he did was plant a seed in my heart. Because I had to keep on taking classes for several more years, and I eventually ended up at the Church of Religious Science in Santa Rosa in California, and took more classes, read more, learned more, studied, and after 12 years, an event happened in my life. I had gotten a letter with a newspaper clipping from a friend who lived up where the trial and the murder had happened, and it said that an execution had been scheduled. Now, they did catch the man. They did put him on death row, and he was sitting on death row in San Quentin. And this newspaper article said that an execution had been scheduled. Well, I was immediately on the phone to the prison, San Quentin, and I said that I wanted to be to the execution. I mean, who had more right to be there than I did? And all the forgiveness work that I'd been doing, all the spiritual work that I'd been doing, just kind of disappeared in that moment. And I was told by the prison that the newspaper had made a mistake, but if I would write a letter to the warden, they would put it in the file and they would let me know. So I sat down and I wrote a letter to the warden, put it on the desk, and got up and went to the class I was taking at that time at church. And we were having a discussion on forgiveness. And one of the women in the class, you know, she said, "Oh, well, you know, forgiveness isn't real unless you let the person know." I took such exception to that statement. It really made me very angry to think that she expected me to go to San Quentin and visit the man who murdered Catherine. How dare she even suggest such a thing? So I was quite angry, and I got out of church, got in my car. I was about halfway home, driving along the very dark street, when a voice came to me, and the voice said, "You must forgive him, and you must let him know." And that voice was so loud and so persuasive, it didn't let me sleep that night. It had me out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning at my computer typing a letter to Mr. Douglas Mickey, the man who murdered my daughter. I took that letter to my class the following week because I really didn't know what to do with it. It's one thing to write a letter. It's another thing to put in the mailbox. That's what really makes it real. And I read the letter to my friends at church, my class, and when I was finished reading it, they stood as a group, and they surrounded me, and they just poured their love and their positive energy into me. And it was with their help, their spiritual support, that I was actually able to mail this letter to Douglas Mickey. I can still remember the moment that I mailed it because the mailbox made a little click. And when I heard that little click, all the anger, all the rage, all the ugliness that I'd carried in my body and my mind and my soul, all for 12 years, it was instantly gone. And in its place, I was filled with feelings of love and joy and peace. I was truly in a state of grace simply from offering forgiveness to another human being. And I also knew in that moment that I didn't have to have another human being murdered by the state of California so that I could be healed. I was healed. And so if I'd never heard back from him, it would have been all right. But I did hear back. And I have to be truthful with you. I was afraid to open the letter because what would a monster write to me? Because everybody knew that everyone on death row was a monster. Well, what would he write? I finally opened the letter, and it was with absolute amazement that I read through this letter, because it came from someone who was obviously very intelligent, who was very spiritual, who had done a great deal of study and work, and who was so, so genuinely remorseful. And he invited me to come and visit him. And I did go to visit, but it took the state of California 90 days to give me permission. They had to determine that I would not be a threat or a danger to either the prison or the guards or the inmates. And a lot of people had said that I couldn't go alone because it would be just really, really too hard. And so I had counted on several of these people. And when the day came to go visit Douglas for the first time, everybody was suddenly very busy. And so I continued my journey all alone. And I don't know how I found the prison because I was so frightened. It was the most frightening day of my life. And when I finally found the place to park my car and got out and finally got to a door and it buzzed and opened and I walked in, there were two guards standing there. And I just looked at them and I said, I've never been here before and I am absolutely terrified. And they said, don't worry, we'll take care of you. And they truly did. Everyone was very kind and very nice and very helpful. I finally got into the room where death row inmates have visits with their families. And I looked around that room. And there must have been 80 people there. Probably half of them were prisoners. And I looked at those men. And what really surprised me is that there wasn't a single monster in that room. They were perfectly ordinary looking people. They all wear blue jeans and light blue chambray shirts. And they were sitting there quietly visiting. They were visiting with their priests, their grandmothers, their wives, their children, their girlfriends. In fact, that very first day when I walked into the visiting room for death row inmates in San Quentin Prison, everywhere I looked, I saw the face of God. And it took a long time for Douglas to finally be brought in. And we sat down together and we talked. We talked about Catherine. And we talked about his losses. We talked about his mother who committed suicide when he was 16. And his brother who committed suicide. And his father who had died of a heart attack right after he'd been arrested. I realized that the night that Catherine lost her life, he lost any semblance of any life that he ever would have planned for himself. And I walked out of there that first day, and I knew that I would be a political and social advocate, not just for Douglas, but for all the men on death row and all the women on death row all over this earth. And so that is what I do today. I speak wherever people will allow me to, and I talk about the healing power of forgiveness. And I truly believe that if we could teach enough people to practice forgiveness, that we would have world peace.
I agree. And for those of you who have just joined us, you are fortunate enough to be listening to Abigail. And she is telling us the story about her journey into the power of forgiveness. And this is You Are What You Love, and I'm your Wild Woman hostess, Wishali. And again, for those of you who are just tuning in, you can get the entire version of Abigail's story at the end of Chapter 5 in my book, You Are What You Love. And for those of you who are listening to this story, I know you're already deeply, profoundly touched. And I'm going to ask Abigail in a moment to share with us about her daughter's foundation and about how you can make a contribution or find more about the foundation. But for those of you who are listening, I know you must be wondering, when Abigail wrote this letter to Mickey Douglas, how would somebody phrase that? How would they manage to articulate a truth that they would send off to the man who murdered their daughter with a spirit of forgiveness? And so I want to read this story, this letter to you in the few minutes it'll take. And then when we get done, I'd like for Abigail to share with us about Catherine's foundation. But this is the story. This is the letter that Abigail sent to Mickey Douglas in death row. Starts out with, I was very angry with you and I wanted to see you punished to the limit of the law. You had done irreparable damage to my family and my dreams for the future. After 8 long years of grief and anger, I started my journey of life. I met wonderful teachers and slowly began to learn about my God self. I was surprised to find that I could forgive you. That doesn't mean that I think that you're innocent or that you are blameless for what happened. What I learned is this. You are a divine child of God. You carry the Christ consciousness within you. You are surrounded by God's love. Even as you sit in your cell, there is no devil. There is only the goodness of God. The Christ in me sends blessings to the Christ in you. Do not look to me to be a political or social advocate in your behalf. The law of the land will determine your fate. Do not waste your last days on earth with remorse and fear. Death as we know it is really a new beginning. Hell does not exist except in our conscious minds. I hope this letter will help you face your future. There is only love and good in the world, regardless of how things may appear to you now. I'm willing to write to you or visit you if you wish. I am sending blessings to you and your children. Gail. Well, I can't believe I made it through that without bursting out into tears, Gail, because that is so powerful.
I think it's important, too, to know that that letter is exactly as it came from my heart through my fingers onto the keyboard that early morning. I've often thought of going back and maybe making it be more intellectual, polishing it up a little bit, what you would do. And I have resisted doing that. I haven't changed it. That's the way it came. And it was the result of making that long, long journey that we all eventually have to make. And the journey seems to be the longest one on this earth. And that's the journey from our heads to our hearts.
Oh, isn't that the truth? And it is perfect, honey, and it is a confession of absolute raw honesty that cannot be improved upon. And I know that I join with my other listeners and just saying how much strength we get in being able to share in your story and share in your truth. And would you share with us, sweetheart, about your work that you do and about Catherine's Foundation?
All right. I'd be glad to do that because I have to explain myself often to many different kinds of people who, raised in our culture and our society, assume that anyone who's had a daughter murdered is going to want revenge. And that revenge is punishment, severe punishment. And they don't understand how I can feel the way I do. And I can say that, one thing I always tell people is, forgiveness is a gift that you give to yourself. It is not something that you give away. It's got nothing to do with the other person. It's about you and about finding peace of mind, and it's about taking back your power. As long as you are full of anger and rage towards another human being, every time they come into your head, every time you think about them, you're going to suffer some kind of emotional trauma. And sometimes you can feel it in your body. You may start to shake or you may start to feel warm or what, but it's a very unpleasant feeling. And when the person that you have forgiven has an uneventful passage through your mind, then you know you have truly forgiven. But it's so important for people to know they're doing it for themselves. They're not doing it for the other person. Now, I do a lot of things because what happened is that very first visit that I made to San Quentin was just one of hundreds of visits that I've made to San Quentin. And I have continued to visit and write to Douglas on a regular basis. And he has become my friend. So if the state of California does finally execute him, they will be killing my friend. And I will be there at the execution, but not to gloat, not to seek